The History of Macedonia, Alexander the Great, the Battle of Issus, Part 2. At dawn, the Macedonians started to descend into the flat plain beside the sea, so that they were some 5 miles away from the Persians. Darius had not moved from his position on the north side of the river of Panaris. The identity of this waterway has attracted a good deal of debate, but by far the best candidate is the modern Paias. In spite of the modern name for this battle, it was not fought near Issus itself. It is not clear when the Persian king realized that Alexander was planning to attack him, although at some point his men began strengthening the north bank of the river with some simple field fortifications, perhaps no more than lines of sharpened stakes. According to our sources, Darius had massed no fewer than 30,000 Greek mercenaries, including the ones who had served with the fleet under Memnon and his successors. This seriously weakened the offense in the Aegean, but that would not matter if Darius defeated Alexander's army, so it was sensible for him to have as many hoplites as he could get. There is a fair chance that these forces of so-called Greek mercenaries included contingents of Carians and others who had adopted hoplite equipment and tactics and were equally formidable. Even so, the total may be exaggerated. The figure of 60,000 Kardakes, Persian infantrymen who fought in close order, is also probably too high. There were also supposedly 30,000 or more horsemen, many of them heavily armored, and even more numerous contingents of light infantry and archers. The sources say little about Alexander's numbers, although they do tell us that most of his field army was present, leading scholars to estimate the force at between 30 and 45,000, usually working on the assumption that most contingents remained at full strength. The problem is there is no information about the rate of attrition suffered by the army since the start of the operation. How many men were detached, how many men were left behind, not just at Issus, but elsewhere, until they recovered from injury or disease. Therefore, we have no idea whether the new contingents brought from Macedonia were sufficient to replace losses or were an actual reinforcement. The lesson of history is that few military units manage to stay in their theoretical strength for very long, and we should be wary of assuming that Alexander's army was an exception. Wherever the details, the balance of the probability is that Alexander's men were heavily outnumbered by an enemy, perhaps 2 or 3 times larger than his. When the Macedonians came down the coastal plain, which was narrow, that forced them to keep marching in column. Neither army could see the other, although before long the Persians saw the cloud of dust rising above their opponents as they advanced. Alexander's scouts rode ahead and spotted the waiting army, which they were at about 30 stades distance, 3.75 miles. Darius made no aggressive moves other than send cavalry and light infantry to screen his army. Gradually, the open country widened and the Macedonians could start to deploy. Alexander led with his heavy infantry, confident that a phalanx had little to fear from a frontal attack by horsemen, even if the Persian screening force became aggressive. Once there was sufficient space, each individual regiment of hypaspis pike phalanx formed up 32 ranks deep. At full strength, this would give a regiment, a taxus, a frontage of 48 men. Contrary to most modern accounts, the entire phalanx was not a single block, and the maneuvers that followed only make sense if the units were distinct, each with room on either side to change into shallower or wider formations. As the plain widened, more and more regiments were able to come up alongside. There were frequent halts to dress formations and keep the proper distances, as well as to judge better space available. Alexander and his officers closely supervised the march. Undulations in the ground meant that for much of the time they remained invisible to the waiting enemy. At some point, the formations halved their depth to 16 ranks, and then finally to the standard 8 ranks, a move that again required more than adequate empty space between each unit before the drill was performed. The march was one of distinct blocks with plenty of space between them, marching, halting, reforming, marching again, and it was a testament of the much practice and skill on the part of the soldiers and officers. Few armies in the ancient world could have managed such an ordered advance anywhere near as well as Alexander's. As they pushed forward, the Persian screening force withdrew to the rest of Darius's army. This was a narrow battlefield given the number of soldiers on both sides. Cleisthenes said that the distance along the river Panaris from the mountains to the east of the sea was 14 stades, 1.75 miles, and that the river ran diagonally across the plain. If the identification with the modern Paias River is correct, then the shoreline has changed, for the distance is near 2.7 miles, and nearer the sea, the river's line was straighter, but it still remains a better fit than any of the other possibilities, and the river itself conforms well to the ancient descriptions. Where it comes down from the mountains, it flows quickly, and the sides of its bed were torn away. Except in a few places, the banks were not much of an obstacle, and the river was readily fordable, although the number of large and small boulders amid the sand and gravel of its bed meant that a horseman would need to go slowly and pick his way across. In the middle section of the plain, the ground no longer slopes, the riverbed is more clearly defined, with banks that are higher and sometimes steep or overhanging, especially on the north side. After that, it widens and flows more gently into the sea and is easy to ford, even for troops in formation. As the Persian covering screen withdrew, Darius concentrated the bulk of his army on his right wing, nearest the sea, where the river was not a significant obstacle. His center was formed with mercenary hoplites and kardakes on either flank, each group supposedly numbering 30,000 men. Archers supported them, where possible, on rising ground behind the formation of infantry. The king, resplendently clad and riding in an ornate chariot, was also in the center, for this was the proper place for a Persian king, and he had some 3,000 of his best cavalry nearby as escort. There was some cavalry on the Persian left, as well as light infantry. Behind the main line, supposedly hordes of lesser troops. Very large numbers of skirmishers were on the high ground on the extreme left, poised to edge around the Macedonian flank. Both these men and the concentrated cavalry by the sea were ordered to make only offensive moves, threatening Alexander on both wings. Elsewhere, everywhere else, the posture was definitely defensive. Darius planned to use the obstacle of the river and the dense formation of his close-order infantry to stop the Macedonian attack. He need not destroy or rout Alexander, merely to stop him, for the young king had to win, and he had to win decisively. A draw, especially one with heavy losses, would leave the invaders stranded and discredited. Sources claim that both sides modified their deployment as the Macedonians approached, but given the constricted plain, sheer numbers of Persian troops, and the inexperience of the Persian army in operating together, Darius was surely unable to do very much. Alexander's advance took hours, and his plan and deployment developed in careful stages. At its heart was the traditional and familiar marching order, the hypaspists in the lead, and the phalanx regiments in the order of precedence for that day. These formed the center of the army, the hypaspists' place of honor on the right, then the pike regiments. Once they were 8 deep, they stretched for a mile or so, depending on how close they were theoretically, at the strength of 12,000 and the size of the small intervals maintained between each unit. For a long time, the cavalry kept behind the phalanx, partly because the ground was so restricted, and perhaps also to avoid any early combat with Persian screening force. Then Alexander sent the mercenary and allied cavalry to form his left wing nearest the sea, supported by Thracian infantry and Cretan archers. For a while, he kept the Thessalians and the companions together on the right, a concentration of his best horsemen not seen on any other occasion. So we've moved everybody around. We're in position. Now we're going to see the beginning next time. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. Some additional sources for the sections on Alexander rules would include, of course, Arians, The Campaigns of Alexander, In the Footsteps of Alexander the Great by Michael Wood, The Wars of Alexander the Great by Haeckel, and The Story of Alexander's Empire by Mahaffey. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.